It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 26th day of February 2019. The longest, shortest month of the year is mercifully almost over. The month that bears the first day of spring is almost here. Okay, so this is all applicable to the Northern Hemisphere. Sorry, Southern Hemisphere folks. My bad. Your fall is approaching. But regardless, yeah, it's the 26th of February. It's Trump-tanic Tuesday, and this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go, for instance, if you would like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you go there now, well, you will be greeted by the likes of Jimmy and Otto and Squeaky. More to follow. We don't have a tardy bell here. And you will, of course, be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, while very definitely a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space and is content to simply be Sparky this evening in the chat room. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We have thanks to send out this evening to our subscribers for the 26th day of the month. That would be Peter, Melton, and Gordon. Thank you. Also, thank you yesterday to Asa and James. I'm not sure. I get the notifications at such weird hours now. It's possible I can start a program and still not have the entire day's subscriptions in. So if I missed out on Kay and Asa and James, I sincerely apologize. Those are our 25th of the month subscribers. And thanks for Kay. Thank you for modifying your subscription. Thank you very, very much. But today's subscribers are Gordon, Peter, and Melton. Thank you all very kindly indeed. We're done with fundraising for the month of February, and yesterday, today, tomorrow, and Thursday are all fundraising-free radio. My favorite time of the month, when we don't have to make any mention at all, and we can just go forward and enjoy. If enjoy is indeed the word, enjoy the news and the radio and the conversation. Certainly enjoy the conversation without having to interrupt anything to talk about keeping the program on the air. Okay? So that's where we are, and it is Trump-tanic Tuesday, a day in which we celebrate, if celebrate is indeed the right word, the manifest stupidity of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, maggots, Trumpansies, libertarians, Republicans. It's kind of a carryover from Moran Monday when you get right down to it. So, yeah, that's where things stand. Oh, I enjoyed the heck out of the conversation with Dan Fisher last night. I hope you did as well. Okay, where to begin? Well, you know how it is. Full flank speed toward the iceberg, right? And so, consequently, let's say hello to precious Ivanka. Yes, darling, dear Ivanka, who sat down for a little chit-chat on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda last night to talk about socialism and free stuff. Oh, yes, full speed ahead into the iceberg, Ivanka. You know it. And so, while there, she unburdened herself of the things that trouble her, that worry her in her day-to-day existence. Yes. And one of the things that worries her is the integrity of America's proles. The way that the working class in this country how noble the working class is and how rude and offensive it would be if the government were to actually serve the people of the working class. She decided in particular because young Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is living rent-free in the heads of practically every Republican and maggot in this country. I mean, it's like she just moves in and mutters that Wayfair, you've got just what I need jingle, and moves and sets up housekeeping. She set up housekeeping in the in betwixt the ears of Ivanka Trump and her filthy perverted old daddy. She set up housekeeping in Mitch McConnell's head. She set up housekeeping in Kevin McCarthy's head. She set up housekeeping in old Jeanine Pirro's head. She set up housekeeping in Lou Dobbs's head. And I guess it must be a pretty good gig. Speaking to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, from apparently the bridge of the Trump-tanic, in discussing the Green New Deal and some of the, you know, which, again, going back to last night, does not exist. I mean, for all intents and purposes, we could call it the partial birth abortion Green New Deal. It doesn't exist. There's no Green New Deal. There's no partial birth abortion. Let's call it the partial birth abortion Green New Deal, sparkle fart powered unicorn herd. The Green New Deal is an idea. It is not legislation. Okay, I don't want to sound like a broken record or anything, but I really think we need to get that through our heads. The Green New Deal exists primarily in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between the ears of those people over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and most of the Republican National Committee and the membership of the GOP. That's where the Green New Deal is. And the Green New Deal that exists for them is a Green New Deal that takes away their cheeseburgers and never lets them eat anything that's deep fried ever again, and makes us all stop burning wood to barbecue food, and they're coming for my smoker, and oh, Christ. This goes back to something I said a long time ago. You can absolutely, and we have in this country, we've had legitimate political debates between people of goodwill who simply disagreed over how to get something done. Those days are gone. And the third way fuckers and the middle of the roaders and, shut up. Because, see, you can't have a policy discussion in which you say, well, you know, the intergovernmental panel on climate change has said that we've got at best, 11 years or so to get ourselves off fossil fuels and reverse the warming trends of this country and this world if we expect the planet to be supportive of human life upon it in the coming centuries. And the other side says, socialist commie poopy head. That's not a conversation. That's not a policy debate. That's a statement of position followed by a monkey flinging poo in the zoo. And so it was that precious Ivanka, with enough Botox in her lips to paralyze a small town, responded in regard to a question about universal basic income that is part of the theorizing, not the laws, not the legislation, just the theorizing of the Green New Deal. And precious Ivanka said, I don't think most Americans in their heart want to be given something. People want to work for what they get. So I think that this idea of a guaranteed minimum is not something most people want. Yeah, well, your daddy wants something, Ivanka, and you know what it is. No, really, I'm not kidding. A woman who has never worked a day in her miserable, misbegotten life in which the best part of her ran down her mammy's leg, who has been given everything in the world there is to give, who has never wanted for anything, never yearned, never feared, never cared, never worried. She knows the mind of struggling America. Kind of makes you feel like maybe you're standing on the Champs-Élysées in, say, 1793, and you just hold your hand up in the air and go, Tumbril! Tumbril, over here! Tumbril! Yeah, hop in, Ivanka. Stunning. But then again, that's what Trump Tanic Tuesday is for. Because the fact of the matter is, there's a whole lot of people in this country that would appreciate a minimum universal basic income. You know, we could give it to the rich people, too. Kind of have to, really. It's like Social Security. You got to pay it to the rich as well. I mean, we got a president who's probably on Social Security. Might be the only walking around money he has in any given month. Because if it's anything but universal, then it's it's whale fire, right? So that's the beginning of things. Flavio says, they are coming for your smoker. You do know that. That's a fact. LOL. They can have my smoker when they pry it from my hot, burnt, scorched, forgot to wear my grill gloves fingers. See, two can play at that game. But imagine that. A woman who doesn't, who has never known what it is to worry about whether or not, I'm being hard on her. Not as hard as Donald Trump would like to be on her, but that's probably the wrong. You were great. You remind me of, it's you. I'm being unfair, though. Because Jared, her husband, owner of that building at 666 Park Avenue, because clueless, I mean, that's like renaming a boat without having the ceremony.
Oh, yeah, it looks great. I can't wait to own the 666 building. What's that big funny cloud that's always over the top of it, huh? I don't know.
But he was worried. Jared was worried. He was afraid he wouldn't have enough money to pay for his 666 building. But then, miraculously, some money flowed probably from Mother Russia through a Dodge and Cutter and enabled Jared to make his loan payment. It's a miracle. And they may have worried about that a little bit along the way. So maybe, you know. And after all, that is just like sitting in your house, not having enough money at the end of the month to buy food, knowing that you've got car repairs coming, knowing that because it's winter, you've been using a lot of coal-fired electricity, and you got a $400 power bill to pay, and not having any insurance, and right. It's the same thing. And just as a point of trivia, the last president of the United States to talk about a minimum living wage, not a minimum wage, but a living wage, was, drum roll please, Richard Milhouse Nixon. Steve in New York says, work for what they get? Are you kidding me? None of them have worked a day for anything. You know, Donald Trump was rich the moment he emerged from his mammy's toxic womb. And at least it was fun to watch social media have her for lunch. Not that she sees any of that either. By the way, she and Jared made something like $82 million. Ooh, somebody's going to throw a rod. They knocked down about $82 million in 2017. But most Americans don't want to be given anything. She made about $4 million from her Trump International Hotel holdings in D.C. And when after the inauguration in 2017, when she left the Trump Organization, why, she got severance pay. $2 million worth. That's some apple. That's some roadmap. Yeah. And bless his heart, over on Twitter, a guy who I find writes quite persuasively on income inequality and related issues, Anand Giridharadas, said, in a major reversal, Ivanka Trump comes out in favor of working for what you get. Her father inherited his fortune from his parents and used tax evasion to protect it. She's lived off that inheritance as well as that portion of the money that belongs to you and me because it should have been paid as taxes. And now we're the grifters? Really? Really? I wish I could do that really loud, shrill, piercing whistle. Tumbrel! Tumbrel! Here, we've got a hat and a necklace for you. Yeah, hop right in, Ivanka. This is all figurative, of course. At one point in time, Julius Caesar said, my daughter, Ivanka, who's going to be speaking later, is she's been so much involved, so incredibly involved, so very involved. I like to say very. My daughter's created millions of jobs. I don't know if anyone knows that, but she's created millions of jobs in China. China. Mm. Yeah. Then, of course, well, today, on a Trans-Pacific flight that probably saw the White House medical staff desperately trying to get the dosage right again, Donald Trump finally made it to Vietnam. I guess they dissolved the bone spurs or something like that. And yeah, about, let's see, this is 1969. About 50 years late, he showed up in Vietnam. Ron in Raleigh says, are you trying to tell me, you mean Ivanka has gasp economic anxiety? I should be so goddamn anxious. Why the fuck is anyone listening to this vacuous dilettante? Well, you're not, I'm not, we're not, but, you know, Emery and Marveline over in the matching Barca loungers, In the house there, where the TV is tuned, it's only got one channel, and that's Fox. Now they're paying attention, and the rubes are paying attention, because remember, there's a little bit of code involved here. When Ivanka says people don't want free things, well, what she's saying is good, decent, upstanding white people don't want free things, but, you know, those people do. Because you know how they are. Jesus. So, we got that to cope with. And, it's convenient that he's in Vietnam, because tomorrow Michael Cohen is going to testify in the House, and all the indications are that he's going to unburden himself of a lot. And it's not going to be good for the Trumpers and the Trump family. It's not going to be good for that mobbed-up organization. And so, consequently, Republicans are out there in advance. Well, he's just going to go up there and lie. He's just going to lie all over the place. That's all he's going to do. He's going to tell lies. You know how it is, them people. They just tell lies. The only problem is, he will be testifying, and granted, this phrase would be lost on a maggot, he will be testifying with the sword of Damocles, otherwise known as the sword of Mueller, or the sword of the Southern District of New York hanging over his head. Because if that fucker lies about one single thing, his sentence can get boosted by another 5 years. He's doing 3. He can be doing 8 if he lies. That is what we call an inducement to truth-telling. So tomorrow should be quite interesting. And, no, I, you know, Bourdain's gone, so I don't think Andrew Zimmern is going to be sitting down to a big bowl of pho with Donald Trump in Saigon. No. It has been a... Yeah, what's that? Marty says, borrowing from Superman the movie, they say confession's good for the soul. I'd listen to this man. And then, yeah, back to stop grossing us out, Bob. Well, hey, what are you worried about? It's not even dinner time in the Pacific time zone, Marty. I ruined dinner here in the Eastern time zone, and quite possibly the Central. Right? Get off the cross. We need the wood. But what else is going on? Well, how's about down in North Carolina, Stan? Mark Harris, the preacher who says that the little women folk should shut up and take orders from their husbands no matter what, because Jeebus. Well, you may recall that he gave up on his notion that he should be going on up to the Congress because the North Carolina Board of Elections was getting closer and closer and closer to actually finding out that Mark Harris, man of God, preacher, minister of the gospel, was actively involved in the scheme that dummied up the vote tallies there in that district in North Carolina, resulting in a huge exposure of ballot fraud. And so, consequently, when the North Carolina Board of Elections announced that there had to be a new election instead of simply doing the right thing and making the guy who and declaring the guy who didn't cheat to be the winner. Well, suddenly Mark Harris began feeling not so good. Today, he said he would not seek the nomination this time around. After consulting with my physicians, there are several things that my health situation requires as a result of the extremely serious condition that I faced in mid-January. Given my health situation, the need to regain full strength, and the timing of this surgery the last week of March, I've decided not to file in the new election for Congressional District 9. So instead, he is endorsing somebody that makes him look downright moderate. Now, Dan McCready should already be in Congress, but you got to understand the way these schemes work. The point here now is to hold off the opportunity, put off any chance that there might be one more Democrat added to the House of Representatives in this Congress, or at least in this term of this Congress. Because Republicans understand that every damn vote matters. God, I wish he'd go ahead and blow that engine on up and just have done with it. Y'all hearing that? The things we put up with. Haven't had so much coal smoke this winter, but that's annoying. Monique says, so why did his ass even run? Well, he was waiting for Jeebus to put the healing hands of faith on him. But no, he's anointed a county commissioner from the district by the name of Stony Rushing. Jesus Christ, is that a real name or a porn name? Stony Rushing. Stony's a hard man. And, like I said, Stony Rushing makes Mark Harris look like Karl Marx. He's a big old gun goober, and he hooted and hollered all during the ballot inquiry about how innocent Mark Harris was and how butter wouldn't melt in his mouth feeder. And he also claimed in January that the North Carolina Board of Elections hotline hadn't had any complaints from voters to report anything funny going on at all with their absentee ballots. Then he doubled down and he said it was them Democrats that come up with all these here claims of fraud, and they did it. They done it to steal the election. And then the chairman of the North Carolina Republican National Republican Committee. He agreed with Stoney Rushing. And then that person turned around and had to admit that he'd been pumping out information that wasn't exactly on the up and up. So Dan McCready is going to have to pursue first a nomination, and then he's going to have to run for the seat all over again, by which time probably the seat itself will last for maybe a year before the next election, if we're lucky. Oh, but speaking of disseminating false information, Jacob Wohl. Y'all know who Jacob Wohl is, right? Creepy little early 20-something dude. Well, he was all impressed with himself because he got himself an interview with USA Today. This is the little neo-maxi Zoom dweeby who tried to take down Robert Mueller with false charges that Mueller was a perv. Why USA Today wanted to interview him, I don't know. Maybe this is a case of journalism doing its job. Because when USA Today sat down with him, after Wohl bragged of his intentions to violate Twitter's rules against the creation of fake or misleading accounts, Twitter went and looked at what he'd been up to on Twitter and noticed that he had created a whole bunch of fake accounts. Well, Twitter, surprisingly, I mean, every now and then, even a blind hog finds an acorn, has ditched Jacob Wohl from Twitter. Because in the interview, he bragged about the fact that he planned in the coming election cycle to run a bunch of fake accounts to try, and he said as much. To try to make sure that the nomination goes to the least viable Democratic candidate for president. Now, how at this point in time you can tell who the least viable candidate is? Well, I got nothing. He considers himself a political and corporate intel consultant. Describing, among other things, his charge that Kamala Harris isn't eligible to run for president because her mother and father were not born here. She was. Well, he bragged to USA Today that believability stuck at about 15 to 18%. Not a bad campaign, he said. Mm-hmm. And so he went on to describe that a situation whereby he would create fake liberal accounts and had created them, and that they were and that they were well on their way pushing false information. And that caused Twitter to bounce his ass. He described his plan as enormous left-wing online properties. Use those to steer the left-wing votes in the primaries to what we feel are weaker candidates compared with Trump. In other words, the very same sort of operation that Special Counsel Mueller has charged that Russia did in 2016. Jesus, they're a bunch of... But, I mean, it's a good thing because he's been bounced from Twitter, and now I'm sure he's pogo-sticking right up the... on his pogo stick, jumping right up on the cross, and he's got that pneumatic nail gun, and he's there, kawhack, kawhack, ow! Oh, but I'm up here! And so he'll be a martyr now. Don't go there. But all you'd have to do is click over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and I'm sure he'll be there like 24/7, talking about how Twitter was mean to him and doesn't want to have conservative voices on the blah 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 blah. Right. Ah, ratfuckers, thy name is Republican. It goes on and on and on. I don't know if you saw the story, but Tony Evers is governor of Wisconsin. And Tony Evers recently announced that it was not an appropriate use of the Wisconsin National Guard to have them down there marching up and down the square on the border, because of Donald Trump's fit of pique and paranoia and madness. Well, it turns out that a member of the House of Representatives, a guy by the name of Adam Kinzinger, who can be found on certain morning news programs from time to time, waxing philosophically conservative, Governor Evers' decision didn't sit well with Adam Kinzinger. He's a pilot, you see, and he's a pilot in the Wisconsin Air National Guard. And as quick as he heard the news, he took off onto Twitter. Did I mention that he is an officer in the Wisconsin Air National Guard? Yeah, I think I did. He added the governor of Wisconsin, you know, his commander in chief. He added him on Twitter and said, "Your guardsmen saved many lives and protected our country on this mission. Did you visit them on the border to see for yourself, or did you make your decision based solely on politics?" And then crafting something out of entirely whole cloth. One such example came midweek when I found a woman alone in the rugged Arizona terrain and thought our coordination, and through our coordination at CBP, was able to rescue her from dying alone in the desert. Well, they took her into custody so she could die with a lot of other people in a freezing cold room. Yay! Oh, no, I know. I know. Hung like Jesus. We're getting there. We're getting there, buddy. I hung like Jesus says, I'm so fucking sick of the flagrant disregard for anything resembling a human by this orange fuck in his dumbass amen corner. That's worthy. Yeah. And I'll get to the other part in a second. You just got to bear with me. There's so much sleaze, so much graft, so much grift, so much fucking corruption. Well, those tweets from Representative Adam Kinzinger did not, shall we say, go unnoticed. Because the Associated Press reported lo and behold, that Adam Kinzinger is now being investigated for those comments because it is a violation of Wisconsin law for a commissioned officer in the Wisconsin National Guard to talk shit on the commander-in-chief, which Adam Kinzinger did. So it may very well be that a sitting member, if there's any justice, a sitting member of the House of Representatives may be subjected to a court-martial. How's about that, sports fans? Yeah, I know. Pop the popcorn, right? Now, the story that that Hung Like Jesus referred to, I saw a little bit earlier today in preparing for the program, and a little bit of historical context might be in order. Pensacola, Florida is up in the panhandle of Florida in an area that is often referred to as Lower Alabama because it is a long way both geographically and philosophically from, say, the densely populated and occasionally liberal voting areas of South Florida to Pensacola and the first congressional district of Florida. Back in 1994, the people of the first congressional district of Florida sent an up-and-coming, shit-talking young conservative who hooted and hollered about property rights and conservative family values and how the taxes was just too high. Of course, he's talking about on rich people. By the name of Joe Scarborough to the Congress. And Joe pontificated and fulminated for several years, more than a couple of congressional terms, before he eventually decided to retire so he could spend more time with his family. But the damage was done. And a few years later, along comes his replacement, a serial DUI criminal by the name of Matt Gaetz. And Matt Gaetz, G-A-E-T-Z, he does. He has a history of being busted DUI several times. But he comes from money, and it's amazing what money can do when it's applied in that sense liberally to keep from having those DUIs ruin your life. One DUI can cost well over $1,000 and ruin a struggling working class family, but it was a minor inconvenience for Matt Gaetz. And so since Matt Getz, and remember, he's also the same scumbag who attacked the Parkland kids for daring to say that they would, that they thought that their lives were more important than the N-fucking-RA. Yeah, he sleazed all over them. But since Matt Getz has grown up in a bubble of white male privilege, he thought nothing of putting out a tweet earlier today that read as follows. Hey, at Michael Cohen 212, do your wife and father-in-law know about your girlfriends? Maybe tonight would be a good time for that chat. I wonder if she'll remain faithful when you're in prison. She's about to learn a lot. Huh. If I didn't know better, I'd swear that sounds like witness tampering. Lock him up, you know? And there is no doubt in my mind that at this point in time, Robert Mueller is somebody on his team, has since seen the tweet. What's interesting, however, is the substance that lies behind Getz's tweet. Cohen, as I mentioned, is going to be testifying tomorrow in the House. You know, where Matt Getz is. Getz has since been described as a Scorsese character, a mobster trying to blackmail a witness. Another notable somebody on Twitter simply tweeted back at him the U.S. code citation for witness tampering. Witness tampering. A felony. But it would appear, based on the tweet, that I do not know if the intrepid Horn Ad Hoc Research Committee wants to look into this. This would be helpful. Does Matt Getz sit on the committee that will be hearing testimony from Michael Cohen tomorrow? I ask because it's kind of important. If he does, then the threat would seem to be a direct one, indicating that he planned to use his time to talk about things that do not relate to Michael Cohen's testimony, but instead relate to the intimate details of his relationship with his wife. Here's where it gets interestinger, though. And a reminder, members of Congress can be charged with crimes. Oh, yes, they can be. We don't maintain that silly fiction like we do with regard to a president that while in office they cannot be charged. Now, here's the deal. A member of Congress is privileged and immune from prosecution or from suit for things that they say on the floor in the performance of their duties as a member of the House or the Senate. That immunity does not, to the best of my knowledge, however, extend to conduct outside House chambers or to things done on social media, like threatening a witness. So since we have that part out of the way, let's consider another piece of the puzzle. If Matt Gaetz is not on the committee that's going to question Michael Cohen tomorrow, then the content inside that tweet would have to have been provided to him by someone else who is going to bring up his relationship with his wife. That means that the somebody provided it to Matt Gaetz, and Matt Gaetz used it to threaten a witness. Let's go back and do a quick and dirty review of the nature of criminal conspiracy. Criminal conspiracy may generally said to take place when two or more people agree to perform an illegal act. Both parties are guilty, theoretically, of the conspiracy if one, only one person in the conspiracy takes a substantial step or performs an overt act in furtherance of the conspiracy. So let's just say that, I mean, and I'm not saying these people are involved, I'm just sort of randomly plucking a couple of the most notorious maggots out of the House of Representatives here, because they would be buddies with Matt Gaetz, because he too is a notorious maggot. Let's say that Jim Jordan, sweaty wrestler Jim Jordan, who looked the other way while boys were being raped in the wrestling program at The Ohio State University, or let's say Louis Asparagus Gohmert, God Emperor of the Crazy People, from the 1st District of Texas. Or let's say that Steve Cantaloupes King of the 5th District in Iowa, and noted Nazi and white supremacist fanboy. Let's say they all just sat down and had a little chit chat, and one of them sits on the committee and said, "You know what I'm going to do tomorrow? I'm going to ask that Michael Cohen about all the times he's cheated on his wife." That's what I'm going to do. All right, so it looks like we are, in fact, looking at the conspiracy situation, because Sparky tells me, as a member of the ad hoc research department of the Horn, he is not on the committee, Bob. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you very much. So here's the thing. If Matt Gaetz sits there and says, "Well, that's awesome, I'm going to tweet that real quick like," and they go, "Okay." Even though it's a challenge for me, the ciphering, let's do some ciphering. Let's count. Aha! And there he is. Thank you, Sparky. This is superior work, brother. Jim Jordan is the ranking member on that House committee. Oh, only on this program. Only on this program. Because, you know, the members of the Maggot Caucus, they talk. And so, you know, maybe it's, you know, Steve Cantaloupes King, Louis Asparagus Gohmert, Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, and they're all, "I'm going to tweet that little bastard." And he then does. Ta-da! One little, two little, three little felonies. Four little, five little, six little felonies. Seven little, eight little felonies. For all, two apiece for all four of those assholes. Sorry, singing. It's not a threat or anything. We're done with fundraising. But yeah, if there's four people, there's eight felonies. The conspiracy and the overt act.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that's special. Steve in New York asks, is it me or are we seeing a whole bumper crop of vile tonight? Oh, no, it's not just you, Steve. That's exactly what it is. Rick Wilson asked on Twitter, Roger Stone and Matt Getz are close. I wonder if Roger and Matt have been in touch lately. This is very much in Roger's wheelhouse. Well, I imagine he's close with Jim Jordan, Louis Asparagus Gohmert, Steve Nazi Cantaloupes King. Jude in the Great Northwest pointing out, as my mother used to say, all you can expect from a pig is a grunt. The Republican Party is filled with them, Bob. Yes, they are, Jude. Yes, they are. Gats apparently sits on Armed Services, Judiciary, and Budget. Jack in Shreveport says, them conspirers, I guess you could call them the Gang of Eight Felonies. Yes, you could. And if one were to... Now, this is all hypothetical and deeply speculative. I recognize that. But if one were to charge however many of them were involved, the fun part is that they would have... The only way out would be to say, well, I mean, I just talked with him about it. We didn't talk about doing nothing felony. I mean, he's the one that tweeted it, not us. And they would have to throw their dear bosom buddy, Matt Getz, under the bus. And Mark Meadows is on the committee. So let's add another potential. The Roger Stone thing's kind of interesting, too. And I agree, this is right up his alley. This is in his filthy Nixon tattoo on his back wheelhouse. No doubt about it. Monique says, now, oh, Bob, quit beating around the bush. You know it's maggot individual one. Of course. But, you know, he's up to somewhere around eight felonies all by himself right now. Hey, what's one or what's another one? Wowzer. Lee in New York, subject line singing. Howdy, Bob. I prefer your singing to Julius Geezer's sing-song about bad rulings where he'll lose before it goes to the court. Ruling where we will lose before it goes to the court, where we'll lose again. That's a mighty low bar to have to get over, but hey, I got over it, so apparently. Thanks. And yes, Monique, you're absolutely right. A hit dog will yell. You may have really hit the nail on the head, Steve. It could be a real parade through the cesspit swamp this evening. So you might let's just get the hockey pucks out and have them close by. It may be that we need them. It may be that they will come in handy. So all that having been said, we have reached the end of the first hour of the program. I don't think it's necessarily the end of the filibobster, but we're going to take a break from it because it's Tuesday, and that means it's Brad and Desi, and that means it's the Green News Report.
It's Tuesday, February 26, 2019.
A climate change skeptic will lead a White House panel to examine climate change.
Trump White House to investigate U.S. military's assessment that global warming is a national security threat.
The excess that it didn't use always flowed into Pakistan freely. India says that's not going to happen anymore.
India curtailing water to Pakistan. Iceberg twice the size of Manhattan set to break off of Antarctica. Plus,
this is children finding their voice. This is children engaging with global issues.
Kids around the world protesting and striking for action on climate change.
All of that action and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Like only the Trump administration would find a guy who is pro-carbon dioxide to lead a climate change panel. Like, who else is on this panel? A farting cow and an actual oil spill?
They may know more about the topic. This is your Green News Report.
Get the f*** out of here, man!
Okay, Desi Doyen, iceberg straight ahead?
Yes, indeed. NASA scientists just warned this week that another new massive iceberg, twice the size of New York City, is on the verge of cleaving off of Antarctica, which they say could further destabilize the Brunt ice shelf.
Great.
Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports that the Trump administration plans to create a special White House committee with a mandate to reassess and scrutinize the science underlining the U.S. military's declaration that climate change is a national security threat that affects U.S. national security interests abroad and at home.
Emphasis on special White House committee.
Special is one way to put it. Notorious climate science denier Dr. William Happer, who has no climate science credentials, will head the panel. Here's Happer in 2014 bizarrely trying to defend carbon dioxide emissions.
The demonization of carbon dioxide is just like the demonization of the poor Jews under Hitler. Carbon dioxide is actually a benefit to the world, and so were the Jews.
Oh my God. He also had this to say about carbon dioxide.
It's just a complete distortion of the truth to call it a pollutant. It's not a pollutant at all.
So he's going to lead Donald Trump's commission on climate change.
Yes, he is.
You know what, Dr. Happer, since carbon dioxide is such a benefit to man, why don't we shut him into a chamber with nothing more than carbon dioxide and see if he believes it's a pollutant then?
Well, Happer either doesn't know or doesn't care that recent studies have shown that too much carbon dioxide actually stunts the growth of plants that we eat and makes them less nutritious.
Doesn't care.
The White House's latest move to undermine the conclusions of the U.S. military came one day after security analysts at the Klingendel Institute, a Dutch think tank, published a new report finding climate change is increasingly a driver behind growing insecurity and violence around the world. The report says climate change intensified extreme weather events are exacerbating existing tensions in already volatile regions with more destructive storms, heat waves, and drought that are, for example, worsening water shortages in the Middle East. Speaking of water shortages, India announced late last week that it will stop sharing excess water that it doesn't utilize with its regional rival Pakistan in the disputed border territory region of Kashmir, an already parched area facing increasing drought. The announcement came just days after a Kashmir separatist group launched a deadly attack on an Indian security detail. India also announced it is constructing a new dam on a crucial river in Kashmir that will also further curtail Pakistan water supplies.
Let the water wars continue.
Well, both nations possess nuclear weapons.
Oh, fun.
Finally, U.S. kids are pressuring their legislators to act on climate change, but in Europe, over the last month, kids across Europe have been skipping school and marching to pressure their governments to act more swiftly on climate change, inspired by the school strike of Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg. March 15th is set to be a global day of kids' climate marches around the world. On Australia's Sky News, State Education Minister Rob Stokes was unclear on the concept of protest.
Kids should be at school. It's very, very straightforward. And there's a March 15th.
15th is a Friday. By all means, if you want to go and protest about whatever it is, you've got the weekend to do it.
Well, they wouldn't really notice them if they went in on a Saturday or a Sunday, would they? The reason they're noticing them is because they're striking from school and showing up to these protests. And we're beginning to see this here in Washington, D.C., with kids showing up in senators' office, begging them to sign the Green New Deal. I'm happy to see that.
Yep, and UK teen Zoe Bennett agrees with you.
It's incredibly important for our generation to be heard about climate change, because it's our future.
It certainly is. Keep up the good work, Zoe. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Nice bumper there. I need to listen to some Who soon. I haven't listened to any Who in a while. We are into the second hour of the program now. Let's run over to the phones and check in with Flavio up in
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you, man? yeah, well, there went that. Yeah,
Wisconsin and it's winter, and doesn't anybody salt the sidewalks anymore? Damn it.
I think Snot Walker stole all the salt.
No, that's what it is. It's like, I can't believe it. It used to be really... I mean,
Wisconsin used to be among the absolute best at dealing with the vicissitudes of hard weather.
Yeah, and now we got Tony Evers. He's pulling the troops from the border.
That's good. Yeah, I'm proud of him. Aren't you?
How do you feel about that?
I'm proud of him. Aren't you?
Yeah, no, I'm.
And I would be even prouder if Adam Kinzinger gets his ass court-martialed.
Yeah.
And give him what the Marines refer to as a big chicken dinner. Bad conduct discharge.
Or how about a Swedish draw?
A who what?
Or how about a Swedish draw?
What is that?
Or a draft. A Swedish draft.
What
I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Yeah, what is a Swedish draft?
That's when they... are you familiar with fragging?
Oh, fragging?
Yeah, like when
when the troops off their little pissant lieutenant because he's an asshole who's going to get everybody killed. Yeah,
exactly. And a Swedish draft is like when they upturn your ass in a vat of excrement and vomit and whatever else.
Well, there went dinner in the mountain time zone. Well played, sir.
Don't I get a cowbell?
Yeah, well, okay. God, you people.
You never heard about the Swedish draft?
No. I was...
How do you pronounce D-R-A-U-G-H-T?
Draft.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. However, D-R-O-U-G-H-T is drought, because English.
Oh, yeah, it's... Okay, so I'm glad I had a head start at 8 when my dad was getting his...
Now, to be fair, if you're speaking Middle English and it's D-R-O-U-T-H-E, it's druth.
Yeah.
March.
I'm glad I had a head start when my dad was getting his doctorate in business at MSU in East Lansing, Michigan. And yes, I did not speak a word of English when I was 8 years old.
Well, you have come a long damn way.
I know. It was rough. It was like...
I got to thinking about something. This is completely off topic here, but let's just see what you think. You are conversant in a number of languages.
And to be exact.
At what?
My native Portuguese, English, French, Spanish, and Italian by order of acquisition.
Beautiful. So here's what I was thinking. I write poetry. And
you do, and very beautiful.
And I got to thinking, I actually printed them out at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a nice stack of them. And if you think about the way books are printed and the size of the print and everything, it'd probably be a decent little book. But the key is, of course, to disseminate it. You know, even reading things in translation is a big deal. And I was actually thinking about you the other night because I thought, wait a minute. If I could get Flavio to translate these poems into other languages, we could spread them even further.
I would be honored.
I think it's not a half bad idea. And maybe I could reach out to Tim from L.A. and see if he could get them done into Japanese.
I would do it for free because it frees my mind. And it's kind of a therapy for me. Translation is a therapy because I feel that whenever I can, let me finish.
Yeah, go ahead.
When I was working for World Press Review, which was the publishing arm of the Stanley Foundation for World Peace out of Muscatine, Iowa. It was quite serendipitous how I got involved in that because my English teacher in college, my college English teacher Jim, who is deceased, he suggested that because he liked the way I wrote, he said, you know, you really should, you know, venture out and offer your services to this publication, which he subscribed to, which was World Press Review. It's still out there, worldpress.org, but it's no longer owned by the Stanley Foundation for World Peace. In 2004, the Stanley Foundation for World Peace withdrew the funding because they wanted to go on to other ventures. I don't know what the deal was. But then the publisher, Ms. Terry Scher, she purchased the rights to the magazine back from the Stanley Foundation, and then she ran the magazine until fairly recently, I'm going to say until last year, as an online only, like, you know, a cyber publication only, and kind of like a hobby, I don't know. But I worked, I translated articles from the five languages that I know, the four other languages that I know into English.
And I could pester Scott to translate it into Swedish. Our buddy Scott in Sweden,
right? And at one point I was paid for it. At one point I wasn't. And then my dad had a stroke in 2005. And then I kind of didn't do a lot of translating after that. But the last, I think, article that I wrote for them, I had been promoted to a contributing editor. So I was a translator and a contributing editor for World Press Review out of Muscatine, Iowa, which was the publishing arm of the Stanley Foundation for World Peace, which I'm very proud of. I worked for them. I made a difference, kind of, sort of.
That's cool. Well, but I think it was Horace, the Latin poet, Roman poet Horace, who has an aphorism out there. And by the way, you know, every night on this program, Flavio, and you're part of it, Every night on this program, we talk about things that I guarantee are not talked about on any radio program anywhere else in at least the United States. Maybe maybe in England, maybe in the UK.
In Brazil, not even in Brazil. No, no.
And so, you know, I just about guarantee you this is the only nightly radio program in which the Roman poet Horace has been brought up. But, you know, translation is a... it's not an exact science.
No, not at all.
It's artistic. You've got to retain the meaning, but you've also got to work within the parameters of
the target language.
Yeah. And what I was thinking about, especially when I mentioned Tim from LA and getting it translated into Japanese, there's a great scene. And I love it. You remember the old program, the old comedy news radio?
No, I don't. But
well,
refresh my memory.
Yeah, well, the guy who owned the radio station was a billionaire by the name of Jimmy James, and he'd written a memoir of his rise in business, and it flopped in the United States. Then he had it translated into Japanese. And then he had the Japanese translated back into English and had it re-released in the United States. And this is what what follows is what happened.
Glorious sunset of my heart was fading. Soon the super karate monkey death car would park in my space. But Jimmy has fancy plans and pants to match. The monkey clown, horrible, karate, round and yummy, like a cute small baby chick, would beat the donkey.
Mr. James will now answer any questions you might have.
You?
Yeah, Mr. James. What did you mean when you wrote, bad clown making like super American car racers, I would make them sweat? War.
Well, you know what it's like when a clown is making like a car racer. It's sort of like the FCC. It's sort of the clown is like the FCC, and I was opposed to the FCC at the time, right? So it was like I was declaring war. War. So I guess that's about it. Yeah.
So then did the American Yum Yum Clown Monkey also represent the FCC?
Yeah, it did. Thanks a
lot.
Yeah,
one more question. What did you mean when you said, feel my skills, donkey, 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 donkey?
You get the idea, Fabio.
Yeah, no, I don't know if translation is like that, but, you know, I've experienced that with, because, you know, translators talk amongst each other. They trade secrets and experiences and you know, that in the horn community there, I'm not the only translator, right?
Right, yes.
And there are some people that translate from the Russian. I will never get used to that alphabet. It's just an ugly Greek alphabet. That's the only way I can describe it.
Oh, you're going to piss somebody off. You just did.
I know. I'm sorry. God bless St. Cyril.
Yeah, but there's just a couple of letters in there that look like germs under a microscope.
No, God. Yeah. Ouch. Yeah, and, you know, the Greek alphabet is so much more beautiful. I mean...
I like alphabets that have real vowels in them. I don't like guessing at vowels.
Yeah, I don't like, if you want a metaphorical alphabet... Go for the Phoenician one, okay?
The problem with guessing at vowels
had a guiding principle, and the guiding principle was that all you had was consonants, and then you had to guess at the vowels.
Right, the problem with guessing at vowels, Flavio, is that if they're all consonants,
there's rules that you can set up. But the Russian alphabet is not like that.
No, no. But what I was getting at is with guessing at vowels, if it's an A, it's mother-in-law. But if it's a U, it's bilgewater.
I stole that.
That's Mark Twain. I stole that. I just want everybody to know.
No, I remember that. It was
Schlagmutter versus Schlagwasser. One means mother-in-law, the other means bilgewater. Because Schlag can mean anything.
I should do this at some point. I don't know. Do you remember Letters from the Earth? That collection?
Oh,
that
yes.
Wonderful collection. I want to read, I'm just psyching myself up to reading this section of papers from the Adams family. And I remember reading the whole thing, you know, Letters to the Earth, you know, where Satan goes to Earth and, you know, he talks, you know, he was banished to the earth for the celestial year, which is 1,000 years. And he writes to the archangels Gabriel and Michael about how weird Earth is and everything. But there is a section in Letters to the Earth, which is the Methuselah papers, you know, like the fall of the Republic, and which Mark Twain is writing about the U.S. involvement in the Philippines and how the Republic had fallen. And you remember that? He goes,
yeah.
All of a sudden, they got the nation in a tizzy with the slogan, "My country, right or wrong." Remember that?
Yep.
And then, you know, here we were, you know, attacking the Philippines, you know, and no, that's just wonderful. It's only 3 or 4 pages, but I want to read that. And I want to go on Facebook Live and do like, I want to practice before I do that because I've seen other people do stuff like that. I mean, you would do it because you have broadcast experience. I've never had that kind of experience, but I would love to do that one. Just 3 or 4 pages, but it's just scathing shit. Sorry.
That's okay. But a little piece of breaking news, or not breaking, but needs to be mentioned within the course of the program. The House of Representatives did vote today to disapprove of the non-emergency at the border.
Oh, yeah, no, I heard that. I thought, what's wow, did it finally grow a spine?
Well, no, it was in the plans all along. It just, you know, it takes a little while to get legislation to the floor. But, it was going to happen. But here's what's interesting. The final tally was 245 to 182. That is exactly 47 votes short of the 2/3 majority needed to override a presidential veto.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
So Nancy Pelosi now knows how many Republicans she would need to whip ass on in order to overturn the inevitable presidential veto if the thing is allowed to be voted on in the Senate.
Yeah, and nobody's embarrassed.
Oh, by the way, the other thing that just popped out, based on what I was talking about during the filibuster,
I heard the entire filibuster for once.
For once. How'd
no,
you like
I'm
it?
I'm kidding.
Tomorrow when he testifies, one of the things that Michael Cohen will be talking about is he, you know, and it's going to be kind of hard to, you know, call him a liar about it for the Republicans to do that, because apparently he's going to show up with the documents in hand.
Ooh.
And he's going to show Congress the check stubs.
Oh, he kept it. He kept the receipts.
Yeah, he's you know, that's a modern, that's a phrase in modern social media parlance. I brought the receipts.
I always keep the receipts.
And he's going to bring
paranoid.
He's going to bring check stubs.
Nice.
Signed by Donald Trump or by the Trump Organization that were cut after Donald Trump took his hand off Lincoln's Bible and it didn't catch fire. In other words, after he became president, there are checks reimbursing him for the hush money payments.
Nice. Very nice.
So that would constitute, and I mean, I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on the radio, but that sounds like that would constitute a felony committed by the president while in office.
Sweet.
And, you know, one of the specific crimes mentioned in the impeachment clause is bribery. And we tend to think of bribery in terms of receiving them. But the paying of them is also illegal.
Yeah. But they didn't, in the Constitution doesn't say, it doesn't outright say bribery.
Well, no, yeah, it does outright say bribery.
Does it say bribery?
Treason, bribery.
I don't recall.
Treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Okay.
So in this instance, the Congress wouldn't even have to have detailed conversations about what's a high crime or what's a misdemeanor. You got bribery.
So that's spelled out.
Yeah, treason, it's bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Wow. I need to read the Constitution again.
It's not a long read.
No, not at all. No, I actually, Alan Beagle, my political science teacher in college, published author. He wrote on the Federalist and everything. He made us read the Federalist Papers, the Constitution.
Good for him.
Everything. And he was a Republican. Let me tell you a story about him. He used to have a picture of Ronald Reagan on his door at UW La Crosse. And when he learned that they were mining the Nicaraguan harbors and they were funneling arms to the Contras and everything, he replaced the picture of Ronald Reagan on his office door to the picture of that famous picture of the signing of the Declaration of Independence by the Founding Fathers. Because that was his original love, the actual Federalists who were elaborating the Constitution of this democracy and how, you know, everybody got together and. And he was a wonderful, wonderful teacher because he, for one, he could be interrupted mid-lecture if you had a question and he wouldn't be perturbed or anything. But also because he had an incredible memory and he was painstakingly going through the Federalist Papers and quoting at length. By memory. I was like, how can you do that? How can you, like, remember citations like that? They don't make teachers like that anymore.
Dr. Bill is one of those.
Well, Dr. Bill, yeah. Dr. Bill is the... They don't... Like I said, Dr. Bill, Alan, they don't make teachers like that that just have texts engraved in their memory. And then they can recall because they read them and they committed them to memory. I don't know how, I guess, mnemonics goes into it. The medieval theory of mansions of the mind, where you compartmentalize parts of your brain into different houses, you know, the house for geometry, the house for history, the house for mathematics, the house for music.
Yeah, and you know, that whole theory probably arose out of the Bible passage about in my father's house are many mansions.
Yeah, yeah, it just, and I find I do that myself. I mean, I just freak myself out how I can remember stuff that I read 20, 30 years ago, and I go, and now with the internet, with the aid of the internet, if you know the keywords, yeah, I have an idea where I read this, or I have a, you know, like, a, you know, just a thumbnail of a book in my mind, and I read this like 30 years ago, and I, you know, and then I go on the internet and I go, oh yeah, no kidding, yeah, I remember this. This was about, you know, the medieval peasantry in France and, you know, the Inquisition and Montaillou and a medieval village and the Inquisition and it was like this book that I read that years ago that was like super interesting and that I still have in my head because it made an impression on my mind. Another one was the one, I'm trying to remember the one by André Schwarzbart, The Last of the Just, and it was about this generational, like, you know, from the Middle Ages to the present to the Holocaust, and it was like this idea that, this Jewish idea, I'm not Jewish, I'm Catholic, but I'm probably Jewish by heritage because, well, you know, Spanish, Portuguese. Are you there?
Yeah, right here.
And The Last of the Just is this book about this generational historical novel that dates back to the Middle Ages all the way to the Holocaust. It's about the just, the idea of the just that, you know, there's like this percentage of people on earth that are touched, right? They're elected by God to take all the pain of the world with them to keep God from destroying the world. That's sick. I know, it's really sick.
And it's absolutely in its own way. By the way, I just realized I've got to issue a correction.
Go ahead.
In mentioning the Adam Kinzinger story, Adam Kinzinger is not part of the Wisconsin delegation or part of the Wisconsin Air National Guard. He's part of the Illinois delegation and the Illinois Air National Guard.
Thank you.
But well, you know, I'm not afraid to admit mistakes can be made here.
No.
And the Horn Family Community Congregation, in this case, Sparky, serving as the ad hoc research department, pointed that out. But there is a Wisconsin statute that says you cannot diss. And generally speaking, hell, the Uniform Code of Military Justice has portions that forbid trashing commanders in chief. So hopefully, I would dearly love to see Adam Kinzinger with a dishonorable discharge.
No, that'd be great. And he's not even from Wisconsin.
No.
There you go. But going back to The Last of the Just, the novel by André Schwarzbart, the French writer, who married a black woman from Martinique. He wrote this novel called The Last of the Just, which is kind of a sweeping historical novel. I guess it was like 500 pages. And it's about the Lamedvav, the just. I guess every generation has the just who take on the sins of humanity and kind of draw back the clock from God destroying the world for our wickedness. I was touched by that novel, The Last of the Just, and I have to read it again. It's kind of
sounds like a good read.
No, it is. It's called The Last of the Just by Andre Schwarzbart, and I really recommend it. It got pilloried because, you know, there's always people that take issue with this or that, but the point of it was his historical novel, and it was written in French while he was a Frenchman, and then it was translated. I read the original in English. God, that came out wrong. The first time I read the novel, I read it in English, and then later I read it in French when I hadn't gotten the hang of French, but I read it first in English, and it made an impression on me because of the beauty of the prose. The translator was really, really good. The way he conveyed the ideas. I mean, the novel is sweeping. It goes through the pogroms in Russia and the Middle Ages and Poland, and you get the idea. I mean, the oppression that these people who held a religion other than Christianity had to fare, and it made an impression on me. And I recommend it. I didn't mean to make this book night, okay?
No, that's okay. In fact, did you call in about something else? I just want to make sure because sometimes
we just serendipitously came around to this. Why did you think I called about something else?
I don't know. I
may have called about Venezuela. I may have called about. Oh, by the way, I really like that. You mean it made me laugh a lot. Marco Rubio, he stands sideways and sticks his tongue out. He looks like a zipper.
Yeah, I kind of screwed that joke up. It's if he puts on striped pajamas and stands and turns sideways and sticks his tongue out, he looks like a zipper. Yeah.
I never heard that. I was dying. I was on the floor. I was hurting. That's probably why I didn't call in. I was in stitches. My sides were splitting, is what I'm saying.
You know, it's gratifying to know that happens from time to time.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't reach the phone. My sides were splitting. I was in a world of hurt.
and you have a great laugh.
I don't know. It comes from the gut. I was like, my God, it was beautiful. It was, okay, let me breathe. Okay. But anyway, so that book is a really great book. And then the other book that I wanted to recommend, since I don't know why, the book night topic. Bring the War Home. I think I emailed you about this or private messaged you about the book about the rise of neo-Nazis. There was the interview with Sam Sater, this professor that wrote this book about the rise of neo-Nazis in the U.S.?
Yeah.
What is her name? Belew. Belew. B-E-L-E-W.
Well, that's is that a German name? Because my high school German teacher was Bavarian, and her name was Frau Belu. So I don't know. That could be because she married Herr Belu.
And yeah, it was bring the war home. The I can't remember the exact title, but it was the rise of the far right or the neo-Nazis in the United States, and it was really good. I mean, it was maybe a two-hour interview with her.
Yeah, I've heard it was quite good.
No, it was and you want to know the kicker? The La Crosse Public Library has the book.
Mirabile dictu.
I have yet to meet the acquisitions person at that library. It must be a very cool person.
Excellent.
So, but anyway, so you think we're going to go to war with Venezuela?
I think there are people who are itching to. The Democratic House has said no fucking way, and it looks like Nancy Pelosi's doing her usual crack job keeping the caucus in order. I mean, 245 to 182 is pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's. I hope that cooler heads prevail. And I also wanted to give you kudos on last night's program, because I don't know if you know, but, well, you probably do because you are one of the administrators and founders of The Horn. And I put different articles on the Sunrise Movement kids going and accosting Feinstein.
Yeah.
And the reason I did that was because I was crestfallen, because that I agreed with you entirely, and I wanted to illustrate that by putting two divergent views, and the moderators at the site were gracious enough to allow both with my caveats that I didn't endorse either. But it was a missed opportunity on both sides.
That's what hurts. Because sometimes I play this little parlor game with myself where I imagine an alternate universe in which, say, Dianne Feinstein says, "I love you kids. I'm so great. I'm so glad you're here. Our problem is two men, and those men's names are Mitch McConnell and Joe Manchin. Come with me. We're going to go visit them.
We're going to go. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking the same fucking thing. Sorry.
That's okay.
I was thinking the same blasted thing, and you nailed it. You nailed it, and I was thinking the same thing, because here we are, we get on our battle horses, and we go, but that was unnecessary.
Well, it shows. I mean, I guess they went to Dianne Feinstein because they were California kids. But, for instance, the minority in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee is Thomas Carper, Ben Cardin, Bernie Sanders, Sheldon Whitehouse, Jeff Merkley, Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, Ed Markey, Tammy Duckworth, and Chris Van Hollen. You'll notice that nowhere in there does there appear the name Dianne Feinstein. Right?
Right, right.
Well, the other place where a Green New Deal piece of legislation...
Again, aspirational, not operational.
Right. But the other places where that would land would be the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. And there's basically two places where environmental bills go in the Senate. Energy and Natural Resources, and Environment and Public Works.
Gee, I wonder who's there.
Well, that's the funny thing. Over on the Democratic side, Ron Wyden, Maria Cantwell, Bernie Sanders, Debbie Stabenow, Martin Heinrich, Mazie Hirono, Angus King, Catherine Cortez Masto, Ranking Member Joe Manchin. Again, no Dianne Feinstein.
Exactly.
So, you know, that left me to go and find out what committee she's on. I mean, she's got, she's got huge seniority in the sentence. She's been there since Christ was a corporal in the army of God.
Actually, a specialist, private.
E1. And
Needle Bailey.
I'm trying to find here her committee and her committees, but neither of them are environmentally related. And so that means that they were visiting her because she's they're constituents of hers. But it really was a lost opportunity, and it created a sense of potential ill will where none needed to exist.
You said it. Ill will where none needed to exist.
And along the way, there's a certain amount of overlap between the Justice Democrats and the Sunrise Movement, because in both instances, you've got people coming out of Bernie's 2016 organization to found those groups. And I read an article about the Justice Democrats the other day in which they announced that in 2020 they will not primary they won't run primary challenges in anything but safe seats. Let that sink in. They're not actually going to try to advance the House majority. They're just going to try to replace Democrats with other Democrats. They're not going to challenge Republicans.
No.
Yeah. So the places that most desperately need progressive choices on their ballot, I think it's the 5th Congressional District of Alabama, where Mo Brooks, Les Brains, reigns supreme, or the 1st District of Texas, where Louis Asparagus Gohmert is God Emperor of the Stupid People?
The Texas First District.
Well, Justice Democrats aren't going to go after those seats. They're not going to go after the problems. They're going to go after the people who are insufficiently pure.
Which is...
I want to be clear on this because I don't want hate mail over it. As much as I like and respect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she did not increase the House majority. She just replaced another progressive Democrat.
That's a very good point.
Because, I pay attention to these things, among other things, when the AIC Act is reintroduced, for instance. We've absolutely got to have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on it because she replaced a guy who was a co-sponsor of the only bill that's actually in the House that has the power to make a significant impact relative to climate change in this country.
What's his name again?
His name is Joe Crowley.
Crowley, the guitarist?
No, Crowley, the fourth most powerful Democrat in the House.
No, he was... Wasn't Joe Crowley the one that he is a guitarist himself.
When he conceded,
he played this song for her.
Yeah, I think that did happen. You confused me for a moment because I was thinking of Ozzy.
I was like, so he wasn't such a bad guy.
No, he wasn't. And so, at least we held on to that seat. But again, that was a safe seat. There was no way in heaven, hell, or anywhere in between
that a Republican
was going to win that seat. And again, before the hate mail starts coming in, that's not me criticizing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
And to your credit, let me tell you, I'm over being an idolater. I don't collect tiger beat back issues.
Yeah, I ain't joining no fucking cults.
No. If they do good things, wonderful. But I'm not worshiping anybody. I've got a mind. You know.
Yeah.
God gave me my mind, and I'm not gonna. And that's a funny thing, you know. I just turned 53 not long ago, and in February, and is it March already?
Not yet.
Not yet.
We'd like for it to be, but not yet.
And I'm not into cult of personality.
I'm so done with it. From the standpoint, I mean, just to expand on this a minute, the AIC Act lost three co-sponsors as a result of the 2018 elections.
That sucks.
We lost Keith Ellison because he moved on and was replaced by Ilhan Omar. So that's one we
didn't take it up.
Well, it hasn't been introduced yet. Hopefully she'll sign on. I sincerely hope so.
I hope so.
I mean, I remember very well how we got Keith Ellison on that bill. We were doing some outside work in front of the Capitol on a lovely spring evening when members like to come down the steps and just walk over to the building instead of having to be like, you know, the little moles who ride through the tunnels to get back to their offices. They'll do that on pretty days.
Mm-hmm.
And Ferg saw Keith Ellison, and he was much younger then. I mean, we're talking about 2012,
right?
Maybe 2014, but you know, still a teenager.
He's still very young.
And he took off running toward Keith Ellison, and I'm like, whoa, buddy, there are people around here with automatic rifles. Don't run toward don't even walk fast. And so he walked over and explained what he was there for, and Representative Ellison signed on the next morning. But so he's gone. So we got and then there's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who replaced an AIC sponsor,
Joe Crowley,
and then Mike Capuano was also an AIC co-sponsor, and he got replaced by Ayanna Pressley in Massachusetts. And given the nature of the bill, I would hope that all three will eagerly sign on to it.
I'm praying.
But we have to do the work.
But I just wanted to let you know, I'm basically a resident alien. I keep my antennae behind my ears.
Oh, yes.
Not to frighten the locals. And...
Well, you sound pretty Wisconsin, so I don't think you've got a lot to worry about.
Nah, well, you never know. But basically, I'm not into the cult of personality. I mean, I liked the talk, Bernie Sanders talk, and I liked Elizabeth Warren as well. But I'm not, I'm from Brazil. And it's not like we haven't had people like that down there, too, that talk a great deal, and then they go nowhere.
And nothing happens.
And right. Nothing happens, and it's just
if I get to hate mail, I get to hate mail. But honest to God, we're 11 months from the first primary. Why are these multimillionaire for-profit media outlets giving free political advertising to all these various and sundry candidates?
Yeah, they consider it a game. You know, it's just like,
well, it's,
you know,
it, it,
how much money can
American
we make
American politics has been reduced to a 24/7, 365, year by year, decade by decade reality television program. Because there's a shit ton of money in it.
Yeah, we got a reality television president who's, like, allied with international
right,
gangsterism.
And we've got the second most powerful man in the United States Senate out there tweeting Benito Mussolini.
Yeah.
And
a senator, and is Marco Rubio a senator?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Not much of one, but he is.
And tweeting snuff photos. Oh, by the way, thank you very much for playing. I came, I saw, he died.
I thought long and hard about that.
You're gonna get a lot of hate mail about that, but it's true.
Well, I mean, if we're gonna be honest, we got to be honest.
It's true. I mean, God knows we'd be better off if we had her in office, but we would still have to hold her feet to the fire and tell her, no, don't do this. Don't be this way. It's like, you know, Albright.
And
it was not worth it. No, it's never worth it.
And that's the thing with Venezuela, Flavio. There are people who are supposed to have really top shelf, sterling, progressive bona fides, and they're out there tweeting about what a brutal dictator Nicolas Maduro is when they don't even know.
They don't know shit. Yeah, they keep repeating the same old tired. Our police kill people daily. They throw tear gas canisters at him, and this kid from Minnesota, you know, nearly lost his head. Olson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no. I got an even better example, and this is from today. After the January 2017 order to Customs and Border Patrol and the ICE thugs, they announced that they had, quote, ended the presumption of release for all pregnant detainees. So if somebody came across the border, it had been the policy of the United States government to release women who were pregnant.
Right.
Well, ICE quit doing that. And so we found out today that a couple of weeks back, or a week back, a Honduran woman was taken into custody by the Border Patrol on February 18th near Hidalgo, Texas. Again, she was pregnant. We have since learned that once she was incarcerated, they knew that she was a high-risk pregnancy, and they let her just lay there and go into preterm labor, and she gave birth to a stillborn little boy.
No.
ICE's Health Service Corps, which of course are not government employees, they're some sort of fucking contractors working on the cheap. She began experiencing what ICE said were, she began complaining of abdominal discomfort, and the ICE Health Service Corps examined her. The clinical director ordered she be sent to a hospital and emergency medical services were called.
Mm-hmm.
But it was too late. The baby was on the way. She was 27 weeks along. She went into premature labor and this is a quote, delivered an unresponsive male infant. Then they took her to a local hospital so the baby could be officially pronounced dead. Meanwhile, having given birth to a stillborn child, the woman is still in one of our concentration camps.
Yeah.
And then when you think about it, I mean, how is that different from, well, if you're rich or you're a congressperson, but I repeat myself, if you're rich, you get the best health care in the world, right?
Sure. One of the things that I found particularly repulsive out of this statute, Flavio, or out of this story, Flavio, is the joint declaration by ICE and CBP that we do not consider stillbirths in-custody deaths.
No, because they're not fetuses.
Well, no, they don't count. Meanwhile, the Senate was having a baby today over.
I like the way you put it, the crocheted cat.
Yeah.
How do you put it?
Kittens with crocheted tails. over the precious little fetuses. Only they weren't having kittens with crocheted tails over little kidnapped Honduran fetuses
in
concentration camps.
No, that because they're not in the womb anymore.
So that's three little Central American children dead. A 7-year-old girl, an 8-year-old boy, and a 27-week stillborn boy.
But what strikes me is that how is that, well, that's only slightly different from the horror stories that you get from women that have to undergo, that have to have children in this country with the healthcare system that we have. I mean, I put up a story on, I think it was, I don't know if it was on the Horn or my wall. On Facebook, about the paternity leave being extended in Spain. 16 weeks! Holy cow! Paternity leave being extended by the year 20-something to 16 weeks. I didn't even know they had paternity leave, but that's cool. It's only like Norway and Sweden. In Spain, right?
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine from the area posted this extended comment about what she had to go through and she's only had two kids. And the C-section when she was in another state and how much that cost and how the insurance didn't cover it and the Medicaid didn't cover it. And this is a native person, a Caucasian, Germanic extraction. She's like, yeah, I had a C-section. I had two C-sections. They didn't even allow me to heal. You know, I got thrown out already, and I was like, holy cow, you know? And then this nation has the chutzpah to go abroad and tell other people how to run their business. I mean, seriously, when we can't treat people here on the up and up. That's disgusting. You know, you want to tell, you know, other countries how to run their business when they already have free health care? Not free health care. That's a misnomer. Health care that everybody pitches in for. Right?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that because tomorrow's going to be a big day.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow... Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington is going to introduce what is quite possibly the most ambitious Medicare for All Act that has heretofore been brought forward. And more than 100 Democrats have said they're ready to sign on to it the minute it drops.
Awesome.
Her staff is calling it the gold standard Medicare for All proposal.
And people are already attacking her.
I'm sure. But here's what, just so people know, here's what it includes. hospital services, including inpatient and outpatient hospital care, 24-hour-a-day emergency services, and inpatient prescription drugs, ambulatory patient services, primary and preventive services, including chronic disease management, prescription drugs, medical devices, and biological products, including outpatient prescription drugs, medical devices, and biological products, mental health and substance abuse treatment services, including inpatient care, laboratory and diagnostic services, comprehensive reproductive, maternity, and newborn care, pediatrics, dental, audiology, and vision services. That is huge.
That is enormous.
Rehabilitative and habilitative services and devices, dietary and nutritional therapies approved by the secretary, podiatric care, that's important particularly for diabetes patients, emergency services and transportation, early and periodic screening, diagnostic and treatment services, transportation to receive health care services for persons with disabilities or low income, and long-term care services and supports. No premiums, no deductibles, co-pays, no out-of-pocket. Just straight up, you're born, you're American, you're covered.
You're a citizen. You're a human being. You're here. You're covered.
And it's even more ambitious. This is important. It's even more ambitious than Bernie Sanders' plan. Because Bernie's plan would let the government impose co-pays of up to $200 per year. This bill says no co-pays.
Yeah, I mean, which is only, you know, what a civilized country. And don't get me wrong, France, I always harken back to France because that's where I lived for a year as a student in college. And I went there with a horrible bronchial cold because I'm a smoker. I've been a smoker since I was 13. I'm down to like 2 or 3 cigarettes a day, but I still
smoke. Good for you.
But no, I know. But I don't buy a pack more than a pack every 5 days or something, you know. But when I was in France, I had this horrible swamp cold that I got from living in La Crosse, which is a valley, and it's you know, we got marshes and mosquitoes and everything. So I got a flu cold kind of thing. I paid $4,000 for an insurance that I never used. And when I got there, the coordinator of the International Student Exchange Program, Michel Heze, who's deceased, he looked at my program. I said, I told him, I have this insurance, you know, I have to pay at the point of service and then submit the receipts. And he said, yeah, you know, you can throw that away. You don't need that here. Something that I had already paid for, but was of no use to me because when I was there, I would still have had to pay for it at the point of service, right? According to the terms of the American insurance. And he said, no, you don't need that. And he took me to a doctor, and he saw me for free. Right?
Yeah.
And I never paid into the exchequer. I never paid into the treasury or anything. I never paid it. It was just the right thing to do. But I had already paid for this obligatory insurance because if you were going to go into a exchange program, you, by rights, you had to get this insurance. And so an insurance company got $4,000 for nothing. Because
wow.
It was, you know, and the idea behind it was that I was to pay at the point of service and then submit the receipts in the hopes of being reimbursed somewhere down the line. I don't know how people fall for these things here or anywhere.
People fall for what they wish to fall for.
I'm sure there's some backwards satrapy somewhere where other people fall for the same things. But where does it seem reasonable that you pay an insurance company up front in the hopes of being reimbursed somewhere down the line?
Flavio, you know? I need to. We got people that have been dialing in and everything, so.
No problem.
It's been a wonderful conversation, and maybe we'll talk offline about those poems and stuff. Who knows?
Hey, send them to me, and I'd be honored to translate them in whatever language I know and you want them translated.
Well, I appreciate it. I think it would be kind of a fun little project. And by the way, James in Illinois said, "Oh, come on, Bob, cut him in on some of the profits. You can go broke together."
You have yourself a good night.
All right, you take care, Flavio. Later now.
Take good care.
From the wonderful world of La Crosse, Wisconsin. That's our buddy Flavio. Let's run over to the stress line and see who's been on hold for a while. Hey, welcome to the program. I hear you. Hello.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? It's me, Reggie from the Gate of Georgia, man.
What's going on, Reggie?
How did you feel about Dianne Feinstein and those kids yesterday?
Did you catch the program last night?
Yeah, I listened to it, but, you know, do you think he was wrong in talking to the kids that way, or were the kids wrong? Well, I know the kids weren't wrong.
Well, I gave a fairly thorough and detailed analysis of of where I think things went sideways, like Flavio and I were just discussing. The saddest part of it all is that it was a lost opportunity for both sides.
Why you say that, Bob? It was a lost opportunity for the kids to tell their side and for her to tell hers. Or was it a lost cause, like you said, for both their sides to tell each other how they feel about?
They were both talking past each other, and so they both lost the opportunity to build allies. Dianne Feinstein lost the opportunity to have an army of youth behind her, and the youth lost Dianne Feinstein.
Right.
And just to repeat myself from earlier in the program. And from last night as well, if she had simply said to them, "I understand your concerns, I share your concerns, we have a problem in the Senate of the United States because the man who runs it will not let this legislation, any legislation relating to climate change, come in for consideration unless he knows it will be defeated. So come on, kids, here, hold Granny Feinstein's hands, we're going to go see Mr. Mitch."
Right.
And walk them over to Mitch McConnell's office and say, "Oh, Mitch, would you like to come out and talk to the future? Because they're going to be alive a lot longer, for many, many decades after you and I have both gone to our rewards. What do you say we both listen to them together, Mitch? And maybe give Joe Manchin a jingle, too, and let him sit down and listen to the future."
Right, because she's like 85 years old, and one teenager was 16 years old. Those kids were what, like, 8, 9, 10, you know, in their preteens or something like that, or even younger?
The youngest was 7.
The youngest was 7, and the oldest was a teenager, 16-year-old girl,
17.
Yeah, 17-year-old teenager.
But they were also accompanied by young adults who had been in charge of teaching them what to say in the first place.
Yes. And they're just concerned about their future, as we all are and should be. And I guess, like you said, I guess he refused to listen with that arrogant, condescending, egotistical smugness.
Hold up. She did listen.
Oh, she did listen.
You know how we know she listened? because she actually said to them, I might vote for your resolution.
That's right, right. And she said she's been doing this for over 30 years. She's been doing this for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what happened within those 30 years, Mrs. Feinstein? Does anybody know? What legislation has she pushed since then? Does anybody know?
She's been in on no small amount of legislation, and she has voted in favor of some things that are pretty relatively liberal and progressive.
Right.
That's the problem with turning politics into a goddamn reality show, Reggie. People live only in the moment, and history
right.
didn't happen before they found the story.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we already got a reality TV show. We got a reality president of the United States in the White House. And I don't know if you watched CNN last night.
I didn't.
What they did to Bernie Sanders with that?
Bernie Sanders. They gave Bernie Sanders several $1 million worth of free publicity for him to say whatever he wanted to say with very little in the way of any kind of a challenge.
Right, but one person accused him of being a sexist. You know that, I don't know, that girl, whatever her name was, accused him of being a sexist. And, that girl was a political plant. Sent in to ask him about sexual harassment and whatnot, about being a sexist.
I don't know. I tend to think that young females in this country, young women in this country, have a right to ask every goddamn political candidate who comes down the pike about sexual harassment, even Bernie.
Right. I do, too. I'm sure he answered it as much as best he could. And black people, like I said, just myself, had every single right to ask him about reparations, you know? Like that. They asked him about that, too. And, he was he was interviewed by Wolf Blitzer, You know who that is, right?
Sure, the larger point here, Reggie, is that this political process is being treated like a reality television show, and so every candidate gets a free hour or so to sit there and talk. And not much in the way of challenge, and they ought to stop doing it.
Why you say that, Bob? They ought to stop doing it? Yeah, they ought to stop doing it.
These multimillionaire for-profit media outlets need to stop doing it. Because, they did it relentlessly for Donald Trump, and this smells like some sort of attempted expiation. Oh, okay, well, we're going to give the free publicity to the Democrats this year. When all they're doing is selling fucking soap, okay? There was no news. I read the follow-ups on all that shit. There was no news in that thing last night. There was no news on Sunday when one of the MSNBC programs was devoted almost entirely to a conversation with Kamala Harris. There's no news when you give away a free hour to a free unchallenged hour to Amy Klobuchar or Kirsten Gillibrand. Or Elizabeth Warren, or anybody running, okay?
Yeah.
Media, this kind of media are a huge part of the problem in the process. I don't know if you know this or not, Reggie, but once upon a time in this country, and it was back during a less than good, some of the more problematic years in this country, but early on, candidates for president didn't go out and campaign for president. They let their surrogates do all the work because campaigning was deemed to be an undignified form of hucksterism.
Right.
Guess what? They were right.
Because it was nothing but pure hucksterism, right? It was nothing but pure hucksterism, an undignified hucksterism, but hucksterism nonetheless. It's like being showboaters, right, Bob? Like you said, a reality TV show. These guys are nothing but three people.
And most of them have worked hard to have one set stump speech. And they just repeat it over and over and over again. I mean, if you went in 2016, if you went to a Bernie rally in Boston, it was the same speech you got if you went to a Bernie rally in L.A.
Right, but I'm sure those speechwriters wrote those stump speeches for a while. Correct, Bob? They're speechwriters? Because you know every politician has one, right?
Does it really matter? I mean, ultimately, the candidate has absolute control over what the candidate says.
Right, that's true. And I just hope, like you said last week, that Hillary Clinton stays out of the race this time. For good, I hope. Because you don't want to see her on television.
Well, I've got a list of people I wanted to stay out of the race. I don't know if I'm going to get my wish or not.
Yeah, but like you said, Bob, you don't want anybody over 70 to run for president because mentality is a natural human thing, and he could die in office, and God knows what else could happen to him. He could have a whole bunch of health problems, you know? He could have a whole bunch of health problems. And how is he going to run the country and get well, too? You know what I mean?
All kinds of things can go wrong.
Yes, yes, and he's way past the age of retirement, right? But the young people love him, and he says he wants to run again. But like you say, I don't know if he's going to win this time around because, you know, all the competition out there. Right, Bob? We don't know if he's going to win again.
It's a different field, and sooner or later, just because it's politics, they're all going to have to take the long knives out for each other.
Yeah, like you say, they're going to have to attack and eat their own. It's like a political cult, if you will, you know. It's like infighting. And, you know, we should all stop doing that. Because we're doing the Republicans' work and job for them, correct? We're eating our own, and they're sitting back clapping, you know, like watching, you know, like watching, well, football. They're sitting up on the stands clapping for both teams to, I don't know, kill each other. You know what I mean, Bob?
It's more like the audience for a wrestling match.
Yes, it is. It's Scott's
auntie sitting there with her ham's beer saying, hit him with a chair, kill him.
Yeah, you hit him with a chair or something or a table, right? And, you know, we shouldn't be doing that anymore, Bob. That's, shall we say, antiquated, ancient, old, all that stuff. We should be more civilized, if that's ever possible. Then we can go back to doing that again, if that's ever possible. I'm afraid
it may be too late, Reggie. You may be absolutely right. Hey, Reggie, I'm going to roll, brother, so I can hit some more calls, all right?
All right, Bob.
You take care now.
You have a very good night, Bob.
You too. Thanks. Later. Somebody, Reggie, calling from Decatur. Let's keep things rolling. Let's go back over to Skype and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, neighbor. How are you?
I'm just fine. Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yeah, Pepperidge Farm remembers. God, what was that actor's name that did that? He was on with Fred Allen on the radio.
Was that Mason Williams?
No, it was the character when he was on Allen's Alley with Fred Allen on the radio was Titus Moody, crusty New Englander. God, I can't think of the actor's name, though. I can see him in my mind's eye, tall, white-haired. Oh, it'll come to me. And who is this again? Who are you? No. I'll be all right. I'm old. Let's see. Why the fuck did I call you today? I'm having a Flavio moment. We go on, and then Bob asks, and why did you call? Was there something else that you had on your mind?
Well, so you know, so often it's the case that we'll take off and run, and then somebody will say, but that's not really why I called. And in fact, you've been known to do that from time to time, if I'm not mistaken.
No, perish the thought. No, I remember now what it was. No, I remember half of it. And I was late to the show. I missed the Bobathon at the top, and I missed the first part of of Flavio's call. But one of the
we had the big reveal.
The big reveal.
Never mind. I'm fucking with you.
Like the showcase showdown. I mean, anyway, one of the things that you do it to me. You'll toss something out, knowing I'm like a big old friendly dog. I'll trot over and pick it up and bring it back to you. You know, but the business of replacing Republicans as opposed to in the House running for a seat currently held by a Democrat to be won by a Democrat, there may be another way to address that that we haven't thought of or haven't thought out fully. And I would like, how much do you suppose is spent in advertising for the typical or even the atypical House race in this country? There's what, 435 House members? Okay. And all of them have to run again every 2 years, or have the option of running again.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Some districts are, you need a big or a good sized media budget to compete. Other places, it's like voters are voting in their sleep. Candidates are running in their sleep. They're repeat offenders, if you will. They were here for 2 years and they're here for two more years and two after that and two after that and two after that. Okay. Why not do this? Take a district in a place where there has been a Republican, you know, since God was a teenager. Okay. Instead of spending, and let's say it's one where you've got to put some effort into getting elected. Okay. There's got to be a big budget involved. What would be the harm in running a test where you import people into a place at least a year prior to the election day, get them registered to vote, and have there be enough of them, A, that can make a difference in the final count, but also during that year that they're there, to interact with others? Because when you're new, you at a place, you meet people, you introduce yourself, you compare notes about life here versus life there. And like, I'm not even sure of the word, but it would be to blend in with people and get them thinking of another way than the way that they've been without thinking about it at all. Do you get the sense of what I'm suggesting?
Yeah, I do.
Here?
I do.
And I know that would be expensive, but if a lot of money is being spent anyway, certainly they should.
But
you're
talking about something I actually think about it on a long-term basis. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are struggling to live in very expensive parts of the country.
Yeah.
What if you could get a whole shitload of people to move to West Virginia and turn West Virginia dark blue?
Yeah, well, that's pretty.
But that would be a that would be a population shift in a state of 1.5 million. What? You'd need 500,000.
Well,
500,000.
Look at the last big race. Let's say for a House seat.
Hey, Scott, would you stand by for a minute? I just got a note. I got to go and check on something back in the house. I'll be right back. Okay.
Okay.
Stand by. All right. Might be a couple of minutes.
All right. Can I talk and be heard? Because I can.
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
All right. Great. This is my big opportunity. Go ahead. Well, anyway, we don't know what Bob's situation is there. What could it be? Could something be boiling over on the stove? I don't know. Is there somebody at the door selling pots and pans? One never knows. Could his crazy neighbor up the street be sending coal smoke into an open window at Bob's mansion? We don't know. Hopefully it's nothing serious. Hopefully it's just something that, you know, it needs his attention, but it's not so much where it's a, you know, keeping body and soul together moment. What could it be? We don't know. It's like algebra. The key in algebra is figuring out what X is. I flunked algebra every time I tried to take it. I didn't care what X was. X, the unknown, okay? It's a mystery. Some things are intended to be mysteries. X among them in algebraic parlance. So that's what I know. It's very hard to, I admire Bob. It's hard to talk for any length of time and make any sort of sense when there's no feedback from somebody else. And I'm kind of out of practice. I can do two-way conversations. But when it comes to monologuing and stuff or filibustering, I'm just piss poor at it. I am seeing on my big new TV that I got the other day after the old TV died, the headlines about this big summit in Vietnam between the demented circus peanut in chief and the Korean bad haircut poster boy. And it's just like the money that went into doing that is a big waste of time. The leader of North Korea, he would sooner sprout wings and fly figure eights above us all than dismantle his nuclear program. There are instances in our recent history where people have dismantled their nuclear program and they got their asses killed. I have, Muammar Gaddafi in mind. How's that working out for you, Mo? Eh? Having a grand old time of it? No, I don't think so. And the winter is not ceasing. Now, I don't have to. See, I'm lucky. I'm here in California, and it goes below 50, and I moan and whine because it's, quote, cold out here, below 50. And you folks in the north and the east and the Midwest, You shake your fists at your device on which you're listening to me now whenever I go into this, oh, it's so cold out here in California. But will winter ever end? I feel for you folks. That would be the only downside of implementing this voter reallocation or relocation plan in this country is you'd have to take one for the team. You'd have to go to a part of the country where the average IQ doesn't rise much above room temperature. So there's that. And then the cultural shift is going to be take some getting used to. But then you might be required to go to a place where it's colder than a warlock's balls, you know, and who wants that? But, you know, we live in a time when sacrifice by, you know, for something down the road that's going to be way better, or at least offer that possibility, you know, we're out of practice, I think, some of us, when it comes to sacrifice. And how would they decide who gets to go where? Is it based on your professional talent or skill set or ability to get on with people? I don't know. It would be an interesting process to walk through it and figure out how something like that would be done. And you'd only have to do it on a small scale to test it. Because let's say in 2020, they pick a couple of places where there's a better than even chance that we could get a Democrat in to replace a Republican and further tip the balance in the House in our favor. It might be a test worth conducting. And like I say, there's parts of it that you have to figure out how it's going to be handled and who gets to go where and making sure that you've got somebody once they're there that they're going to put forth the effort to, is it colonizing a place?
You could call it that.
Good God, I'm hearing a disembodied voice. I didn't mean it.
You know, and it was, life in West Virginia, it's after dark, random people pull up in your driveway, and
you got to look kind of weird. Well, what's that all about?
Yeah, jeez. We're all good. Somebody was lost.
Oh, good. Well, no, I'm sorry that they were lost, but now they're found, so... But anyway, I hope I did you all proud with my little rambling conversation while you were gone. I was running out of steam. You came back just in the nick.
Yeah, it's not as easy as it seems, is it?
Well, I'm out of practice. You do it every day, but I know it's you've got some.
God, I can't get a break. Yeah. Well, it's not as easy as it seems, is it? Well, you do it every day.
Well, no. I mean, what I'm saying is, I will grant you, and knowing this from pure experience, it is not as easy as it seems. Okay, I did stand up once. Did I ever tell you about that?
No.
This was back in when the fuck was this? I was still in Kansas City. I know when it was. It was about the time of the Kuwait Gulf. What did they call that? The Gulf Storm, Gulf Desert Storm. Okay.
And Operation Get the Oil.
Yeah. And the University of Missouri, Kansas City, had something, or maybe they may still have it, called Communiversity. And it was basically a whole shitload. They'd send a catalog two or three times a year of not-for-credit courses that people could take, all kinds of topics and subjects and things, to enhance their drab, wretched lives, okay? And there, on one of the pages in one of the catalogs was a course, how to be a stand-up comedian in 3 easy lessons. So I said, well, this is right up my alley. And it was conducted by a professional stand-up, regionally famous. It was 3 sessions every Tuesday night for 3 weeks where you learned, the basics of stand-up comedy. And then for the final exam, the class went to a comedy club on open mic night, and each of us got to do 5 minutes, and based on what the crowd's response, that's how well you retained the information and used it in a real life situation. And the only line I remember, H.W. Bush was president, and there was this ongoing controversy between about pronunciation. Was it Saddam Hussein or was it Saddam Hussein? Okay. So I get up and I take a piece of paper out of my pocket that's folded up. I unfold it and clear my throat and say, the following act has not been cleared by Iraqi censors. So that was my open. Okay. Because the big thing in the news was the reporters on scene would have to have their reports cleared by Iraqi censors. You remember that?
Sure.
So anyway, the thing of the only real line that I remember was the difficulty that H.W. was having, Saddam Hussein versus Saddam Hussein. And I said I consulted my Iraqi to English dictionary, and pronunciation is everything. Saddam Hussein means noble, righteous, just leader. And Saddam Hussein means one who fucks goat in darkness, But it's—I don't know. I got a sitting ovation. So that's that story. But anyway, back to the deal with this idea that I have of moving voters to places where it could count if they do it right. You were saying people who are having a hard time in expensive areas moving. And that's when you had to walk away for a moment.
Yeah, that's when the car pulled up in the driveway, right?
Yeah.
And other people, well, it's one of the interesting aspects of this community. We often think about the same things. James in Illinois just wrote in, subject line, depopulating Puerto Rico. I've been brainstorming the possibility of turning the Deep South blue, but I can see the value of importing 200,000 more not-a-coal-miner types. Right, and for instance, Hurricane Maria, to a certain extent, changed the voting demographics in South Florida,
mm-hmm.
because that was the easiest place for people who had been impacted by the hurricane to decamp to.
And didn't when Katrina occurred, a lot of people got moved. It seems to me, I recall, a lot of people got moved to the Houston area. Did that make any impact, or was it out of the cycle? Or
Houston is a blue city, but then again, that's one of the myths about Texas, that it's this blood red enclave. And certainly, John Brittavo can testify to this. The cities in Texas are all blue. It's the fact that there's so much rural countryside that keeps the state red.
Yeah. Well, I lived in Corpus Christi for the better part of 2 years in the early 90s. And that was my only experience with living in Texas. And it is like a vacation type area because you've got Padre Island nearby.
Right.
So tourism is a big deal. And it's down there on the Gulf, which is different from being landlocked, say, in Dallas or Houston. And it wasn't Austin. I've never been there, but I've heard tell that Austin is like the liberal oasis in Texas.
Yeah, Austin is Madison without the snow, and Madison is Austin without the heat.
Yeah. But I don't recall. See, but back then in the early 90s, I believe Ann Richards was still governor then. You know, that was before W got elected. You know, and we're talking, what would that be now? 20 some odd years, 25 years, whatever, early 90s. I'm so bad. You talk about trouble ciphering. I have worse trouble than you. If I don't have a calculator, I become screwed. I am become
89 screwed. Is 30 years ago now.
Okay, Jesus. Where does the time go? So you got to think of, even in Texas, politics then were not anything like they are now. There was at least, you know, a viable Democratic Party to win statewide office. We even had, who was the senator back then? I guess Lloyd Benson was the one.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I knew John Kennedy. John Kennedy was my friend. You know John Kennedy.
That is a moment, Bob. That is a singular moment in my life. That
31 years ago,
that shot across the stage where you see Lloyd in the foreground and Quayle looks like he's about to cry off in the distance. I mean, it was like a shot.
Oh, that was one of the great moments up until one of the greatest moments of vice presidential debate. Just destruction until Joe Biden took apart Paul Ryan and handed him back to himself piece by piece.
Oh yeah.
Oh, and the thing that got us started, Scott, I did look it up.
Yeah.
And I have it here.
Good.
Remember making toast in a gizmo like this? Maybe you remember Grandma toasting homemade raisin bread loaded with plump raisins, swirled with cinnamon. That sweet aroma wafting through the kitchen. Hepbridge Farm remembers, they're making raisin bread like Grandma made. No artificial preservatives. A treat for breakfast, coffee breaks, or midnight munchies. Try Pepperidge Farm raisin bread. You see, Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Parker Fennelly, it just came to me, was the actor who played Titus Moody with Fred Allen. And I think it was the same guy that did the Pepperidge Farm remembers.
By the way, you've received kudos. Steve from Georgia Stan says, Scott did great. And Darlene in Connecticut said, kudos to Scott. He did a great job covering for you, Bob. It was hilarious. LOL.
Oh, good. Damn. There's no business like... Oh.
Hey.
All right. Do my Ethel Merman. Well, what was that movie, Airplane? Where the guy's in the psychiatric ward and, you know, the soldier is there in the bed and it pans down. And this one guy in the hospital, is his problem is he thinks he's Ethel Merman. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
No, I love that movie. I picked the wrong day to give up sniffing glue.
That has become, I'm just about, sometimes I'm pretty close to jumping in the car and running over to the nearest tattoo parlor and getting that tattooed in reverse image on my forehead so I can just see it every morning. I picked a bad day to quit sniffing glue.
So is this a viable plan, at least on a test basis in a couple of markets?
I'd like to say yes, but I don't think so. And one of the, it's interesting that more than the other side, the particularly nasty white nationalist, white supremacist, Klan neo-Nazi types have been talking about this for years. That's why some of them, that's why so many of them went to Idaho.
Oh, you mean doing it like colonizing for unpleasant purposes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and they do do that. That's one state you'll never catch me in, morning, noon, or night. And I'm sure Idaho has a great deal to recommend it. Not for me, baby. I read too much. You know, that whole Pacific Northwest was crazy land 35 years ago or whatever. The guy, I forget the guy's name, was ahead of this.
Well, you have to remember, historically speaking, that Oregon is the only state to ever enter the Union as a state that forbade African Americans from even living there.
Do what?
Yes.
When were they admitted to the Union?
Oh, what, 1845, something like that?
And it's part of their constitution or part of their rules for what they, their conditions?
Yeah, they passed a law.
Holy fuck.
And it reverberates down through the decades and the centuries because Portland is the whitest major city in the United States.
Well, certainly it must have changed because isn't that where?
Oh yeah, yeah. The law went away.
No, but I mean the mindset is what I'm thinking.
There's a lot of discussion that takes place around that because the Northwest can be a very hostile place for people of color.
Even in places like Portland?
Yes.
I see.
It was in Portland that the white supremacists stabbed two people to death on a train not 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, I remember that, but that I just took that to be not reflective or representative of the mindset of the community there. I've never seen it, but I've heard of a show of comedy on AMC.
Portlandia,
guess,
yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen it either.
Yeah. There's so goddamn much to see.
There's too much to watch, just the conversation last night with Dan Fisher pointed out.
I can see it better now. We haven't spoken since my old TV died. My little 24-inch flat screen, Polaroid flat screen. I got it secondhand through Amazon or refurbished, whatever. I forget what I paid for it. I want to say $101. And it did me well for, I guess, 6 years, which is not bad. And it just tried to turn it on the other morning, and it just wouldn't come on no matter what I did. So I went in the back closet and pulled out my little 15-inch Magnavox flat screen, which is more like a kitchen TV, not one that you have in your main room. And I said, dear God, let me get a new TV before I go blind, because if I've gone blind, I'll never be able to pick up or set up the new TV because of eye strain. And I mean, the picture was okay, but the print on the on-screen guide, you just couldn't see it hardly from, 5 feet away. But anyway, I found a TV, 32-inch diagonal, flat screen, all the bells and whistles I wanted, guaranteed, certified, refurbished, 32-inch, $88, plus about $6.
720 or 1080?
720, but there's a 1080 compatibility situation where it's a hell of a picture. Let me just put it that way. Because I was the local over-the-air subs channels and main channels are all in 1080, and it looks great. I don't have 1080 on my cable picture. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, it's like those 75-inch TVs. Those damn things are so big, I'm afraid that if it was on in a room and I walked in, I'd be like, what are you doing here?
Well, see, I couldn't have anything bigger than this. It was when it arrived the other day on Sunday, okay, I didn't realize that the base of it was designed the way that it was. It didn't fit on the top shelf of where the old TV was. So I had to take the bookshelf, which is wider, take everything off that, drag that puppy into the corner where the TV is, and set the new TV on that. Oh, it looks great. I'm sitting here looking at it, and it's so pretty. I'm almost close to tears. I'm almost close to tears, Bob.
No puddling up, damn it.
But anyway, I don't know. I'm rambling a lot today. I didn't see a bit or hear a bit of. Did Cohen testify today?
That's
when
tomorrow.
You said big reveal. That's. Oh, I thought it was today.
No, it's tomorrow.
Oh fuck! Well,
that's why Matt Gaetz engaged in some witness intimidation today.
Oh, what did he do?
First of the program.
Okay, I'll catch it on said the replay.
He sent out a tweet threatening Cohen with big reveals about marital infidelities.
Well, at this point, his reputation is pretty much shot to hell anyway, so what would it matter? I mean, unless it were like child abuse, child porn.
Well, no, it matters insofar as if he's already going to prison for 3 years, if he gets up there and demonstrably lies,
they'll bump it up.
He gets five tacked on.
Oh, I did hear that he got disbarred today formally.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. I mean, you hate to see bad shit happen to people, but sometimes you have to have it. Oh, and the thing about Manafort, his lawyers pleading, you know, he suffered enough. Give me a fucking break. I almost threw something at the brand new TV. I was so disgusted. But I thought better of it. I just tossed it up in the air and let it land in my lap. So.
Well, if you do throw something at it, you'll be gratified to know that I just got a note from Lee in New York saying I recently bought a new, not used, 40-inch Westinghouse 1080p for $150 plus tax.
Good God. How many inches?
40.
I don't know what I would do with a screen that huge. It would overwhelm the room. I'll tell you what a difference. Now, you might think that going from 24 to 32 is not a major difference in diagonal screen size. But once I got it set up and fired up, I'm sitting here in the recliner. Chirps the cat is sitting on the right arm of the recliner, as she often does. And even she was reclining. She sat up and looked at the screen for several moments, and normally she couldn't be bothered with TV, so it impressed even Chirps the cat.
Oh, and for clarification, Marty reminds us today Cohen testified behind closed doors. He testifies tomorrow in public, and I think it's going to be on like it'll be on everything, but C-SPAN 3 will have it if you don't want the ads.
Yeah. Well, I don't have C-SPAN on my cable package, but I can fire up the laptop and. You know, the coolest device that I've got, I think, one of them, is Apple TV. When I signed up for DirecTV Now, which I understand they still haven't gotten to work right for everybody, and they 100-some-odd thousand subscribers have canceled in the last year. But be that as it may, I got to keep the Apple TV box. It's like a Roku device. But you can do it from your computer or your phone, iPhone or MacBook or whatever this computer is. There's this thing called Apple Play, where you can send whatever it is that's playing on your device to your TV wirelessly. And that, to me, is one of the coolest damn things I've seen in a while. And there may be some way to do it without Apple Play, I think it's called. What the hell is it called? Jesus, I'm fractured today, and I'm not high, I'm not drunk. Apple TV, or AirPlay.
AirPlay, there we go.
AirPlay, Jesus, I'll be all right. I picked the wrong day to not get enough coffee. That's the quality of my excitement level. The biggest thing in my life is coffee, and bad coffee at that.
You still have to look up that Nescafe decaf.
Oh, yeah. I looked for it in the store the day after you mentioned it, but I must have been at the wrong store. They had a small selection, and I didn't see it. But I've got to go to Ralph's tomorrow and pick up something. I know where it was. It was at Target. I had to pick up a prescription, and they have a limited coffee selection because it's one of these Target Express stores. Have you heard of this?
Uh-uh.
It's not a full-size Target.
Oh, no, that's the new trend.
Yeah.
Walmart has them, too. Walmart Neighborhood Markets.
Yeah, yeah. And the one that opened first, there was a hellacious amount of neighborhood protest, but they worked it all out. And I used to go to that. Well, as a matter of fact, that's where I still have my prescriptions. And it was only like a half a mile from where I was living before I moved to where I am now. And I still use it, but they're opening a new Target Express about four blocks from where I am now, on University in right in the heart of North Park, which is my little neighborhood here. And it's two levels. I think the building years and years ago was, I believe it was a J.C. Penney's, an urban location, which you just don't see those anymore, except maybe in small towns. I'm pretty sure it was a J.C. Penney's, like back in the 50s and early 60s. And then malls came into prominence, and it wasn't really a blighted area. But the preference of shoppers was not to deal with downtown or not to deal with, you know, anything in the city. Go out where there's plenty of parking, free parking at the mall, you know. But malls are there going to be malls in 10 years?
Hell, are there going to be malls next year?
Yeah, well,
Charleston Town Center down in Charleston, West Virginia, at one point in time was the biggest mall in the middle of a city.
In Charleston, West Virginia.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, the two levels, let's see, Kaufman's and then Macy's. There was Sears. There was Montgomery Ward. There was JCPenney. They're all gone now. I think maybe Penny's is left.
Mm.
There are empty, and the whole damn thing was just auctioned off on the courthouse steps.
Jeez. Well,
I mean, it's still up and running, but the ownership is bust.
Right in the downtown of San Diego, and it was built in the mid, about 86, 87 maybe.
Yeah, I've seen that one too, and it's
Horton
empty.
Horton Plaza. I think there's like one or two viable stores left in it. And I'll never forget the first time I ever visited there when I was just visiting San Diego. And it had just, Horton Plaza had just opened. This was in 1989, my very first visit. And it was in December. And I'll never forget, my wife and I caught the bus from Pacific Beach, the hotel where we were staying, to downtown. Because we wanted to see Horton Plaza, an in-city mall, okay? And I'll never forget, it was the evening. It was jeans, T-shirts, and Birkenstocks weather going up the escalator into Horton Plaza, which was like, it's an outdoor. The stores are indoor, but the courtyard is all exposed, okay? And just not being able to get my mind around walking around in jeans, T-shirts, and sandals in December, okay, at night, all right, even. But the layout of the place reminded me of an East, is it E.C. Escher painting?
M.C. Escher.
M.C. Escher, okay, because it's weird. Stairways and escalators don't seem to go where you thought they were going. It's like the architect must have been on good acid, because it's a weird situation the first few times you're there. You know, it's not linear in the sense of laid out in like, I can't even describe it because I'm not an architect, but it's not a boxy situation. There are lots of angles and levels, and I'm glad I wasn't high when I went there because I'd still be
lost. There's one guy out on the web somewhere who has made his little niche in the world out of visiting ghost malls.
Oh, that's cool.
And his videos on YouTube are really quite interesting. But hey, Scott, we've made another program disappear.
Well, I live to serve. I hope I did all right.
Oh, you didn't. Hope we did well. We hope we passed the audition. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Remember?
Pepperidge Farm.
Man, did you ever try their bread?
Yeah, it's good.
Their sliced bread? Oh, God. And I don't even know if they carry it.
They're farmhouse white. They're sourdough. Their thick slice Italian bread makes the best grilled cheese you've ever eaten.
Oh, now I'm drooling, Bob. I'm salivating.
That and a little tomato soup, and well, it'll warm your bones, even if your bones don't need warming.
Take you home. All right, Bob. Well, take care, and no more drive ups from unknown persons.
Yeah, hopefully that was the last one. You know, sooner or later, over the course of all the years of this program. You know, that was bound to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I remember one night it was the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Well, I always tell them I'm on my way to give blood, or I tell them, you can come in, talk to me all you want, but I've got to take a bath, so you'll have to sit on the commode and watch me.
Yeah. All right, Scott, with that, you got to leave.
Fish around for my rubber duck, if you get my meaning. If you catch my drift.
Oh, we're gonna leave. We may have just negatively impacted dinner in the Pacific time zone.
Nothing's gonna surpass it in disgust. The what was it? The Norwegian or Swedish drift?
Yeah, don't even.
Oh
yeah,
God, no. I almost wept when I heard it. I got chills just now. Let me go.
Yeah, and a Cleveland steamer to go with it while playing a rusty trombone. Jesus Christ, no.
Or a squat cobbler.
I don't want to know. Say goodnight, or I'm hanging up on you.
Good night, Bob.
Good night, Scott. That's our buddy Scott. That's the end of the program. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Jesus, this was this is one of those where you start the program and the next thing you know it's over. But thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to those of you, all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks ever so much to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you ever so kindly to John Fox in Australia, to Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. And thanks always, celebrating their 20th anniversary, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.